Good morning. It is 9 a.m. We are here today, July 9, 2018, in the OPA hearing room, suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagania, Guam, for the motion hearing of OPAPA 18-003, Take Care Insurance Company, Inc. versus the Department of Administration. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Deputy Public Auditor Yuka Hechinova. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Vince Duenas and Jared Hernandez. Will appellant Take Care please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
David Mayer, attorney for Take Care.
Marvin Loft, land administrator for Take Care.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency DOA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Shannon Titano from the Attorney General's Office, representing the Department of Administration. And here with me is Joseph Perez, also an assistant AG representing the Department of Administration.
Thank you. You may proceed.
I'm sorry, because the bells were going off when you were saying your name and your position. Could you just repeat that?
Arvin Lohol, Plan Administrator for Take Care Insurance.
Arvin. Okay, so Arvin, and what? How do you spell your last name?
L-O-J-O.
L-O-J-O, and your position is?
Helpline Administrator.
Thank you, for Take Care, right? All right. So we're here for two motions, and that were filed by the appellant. There is Take Care's motion to compel production of documents. There's Take Care's motion to cancel the RFP. And your motions, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to give you the your choice of which two to begin with.
I would like to begin with the motion to cancel it.
Okay, so we'll start with the motion to cancel. And just to advise the parties, how we're going to march forward is kind of just like the Superior Court of Guam. Because it's Mr. Mayor's motion, he's going to argue it. You're going to have the opportunity, Ms. Titano, Mr. Perez, to put any opposition you have, and of course, because they have the burden of proof, Mr. Mayor will have the final say with a rebuttal at the end. Okay. So, Mr. Mayor, you have the floor.
Thank you. On the motion to cancel, there are various different reasons. Really should be canceled based on the procurement record that's been produced. And I'll just take them one at a time. You know, number one, the lack of voting sheets. Now, in fairness to the Department of Administration, I can't really tell. Well, first of all, there are no voting sheets in the procurement record that we reviewed. And I didn't see voting sheets identified in any of the privilege logs. So, as best I can tell, I have not seen voting sheets. And if there are not voting sheets that were executed as the statute requires upon the casting of votes, now I don't think that literally means that I vote and I hereby sign, but I think the intent of the statute is you vote in the meetings, and then after you make a decision in the negotiating team, at the end of the meeting, you know, you just sign a voting sheet showing who voted for what. And that's the way the negotiating team indicate that you've actually made a decision, is that you have to have a voting sheet and you have to sign the voting sheet upon the casting of your vote, which I take it to be at the sometimes during that meeting. I haven't seen any voting sheets. Now, if there really are voting sheets and if they really were signed at the time of the meeting, well, then the issue comes up in the motion to compel, not necessarily in the motion to cancel. But I would appreciate in the response from administration, I don't mind saying so, whether or not there actually are voting sheets and were they actually signed either during or at the time of the meeting that the decision was made to approve the RFP. Because if there aren't, well then we believe the RFP would have to be canceled because there's been no decision under the negotiating team rules to approve the voting sheets. So that's that argument. I'll address the voting sheets again in the motion to compel, but as far as the motion to cancel, I'm assuming there aren't voting sheets because I haven't seen any, and I haven't seen any identified in the privilege logs.
Well, let me just cut to the chase here, Ms. Titano. Are there such voting sheets?
Yes, there are voting sheets, and we'd be happy to disclose them to take care, as we don't think there will be any information in there that we wouldn't be able to disclose under the Guam procurement law, but we just ask for a proper order to disclose that because of Public Law 3283, which precludes the team from disclosing information that was obtained in meetings. And as I said, we have no problem with providing that to take care and the public auditor once we receive a proper order to disclose.
Do you, could that be a stipulated order? Or do you need me to just make a ruling and an order on the disclosure of those documents?
We prefer a ruling and an order
from
the public auditor.
All right, so the short answer, though, because I do have the procurement record now. I know it's about this thick. I've only gotten through maybe that much of it. Okay.
Can I ask one other question about the voting sheets, Your Honor? Ms. Titano, that might clarify. Were the voting sheets executed at some point during or before the end of the meeting where the decision was made to approve the RFP? Because that's what the statute requires. It says upon casting your vote. And the reason I ask that is I'm about to discuss some other documents that were signed after the protest was filed.
Ms. Titano is not a witness, and I don't want to hold her to anything without having the actual documents. But I'll just ask her. Ms. Titano, do you know the answer to that question?
Oh, yes, we do. The voting sheets were executed right after the voting in the meeting that was held regarding whatever issue they needed to decide on at that moment. And that'll show if we get a proper order to disclose.
Okay, so there is, the short answer to your question, Mr. Mayor, is there are voting sheets, and they appear based on the representations of Ms. Titano to, at least at this time, to have been made at the proper time. But I'm not making a ruling on that issue because that's not really before me right now.
Well, if that's correct, Your Honor, then that wouldn't be a basis to cancel the RFP then. Okay, so and the reason we filed the motion on it is I didn't see anywhere identified in the privilege logs or anywhere.
But are they in the, let me just ask, are they in the procurement record? Because I haven't gone through the whole thing.
So when we filed the procurement record, we noted as tab 14 that we have documents that we would otherwise produce except for this prohibition in the law. I apologize, it didn't specifically say voting sheet. It just kind of lumped everything into that one tab. And again, we'd be happy to disclose it to the public auditor and whatever we can to take care, but we would like a proper order from maybe the public auditor. I don't even know if it would require a court order at this time, but we just need a proper order so that we comply with that law to disclose.
I think you're covering those voting sheets in your motion to compel, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we'll take that up at that time. Okay, you may proceed, Mr. Mayor.
The next ground for the motion to cancel would be the lack of a determination in deed. And the statute at issue is 5 GCA 5249E. And that particular statute says that the procurement agency, quote, shall maintain a complete procurement record and that the record shall include the requesting agency's determination of need. Now, under negotiating team rule number one, which was approved by Public Law 32-83, it says, quote, negotiating team is responsible for solicitation of the group health insurance benefits for employees and retirees of the government. So we have a statute that says you have to have a determination of need by the procurement agency, and then you have another statute that says the group that is responsible for the solicitation of group health insurance is the negotiating team. Now, I think it's undisputed that there is no written determination by the negotiating team itself that this procurement is necessary. Now, there are an exchange of emails, and I believe that they are dated March 30, 2018, between two DOA staff members where they are discussing the need for a determination. Okay? But there is nothing, no decision that I'm aware of was made by the negotiating team where they have made a decision to approve a determination of need. Now, I just heard that there's a was the decision made where they approved signed voting sheets. But I haven't heard anywhere that there was a decision from the negotiating team to approve a determination of need. Now, what we do have, though, are those two emails from staff members saying, hey, you know, there's a need for this. Then, after we filed our protest on April 18th, the Department of Administration was putting together the procurement record. And their memo says, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think it's accurate, is that as a consequence, they then documented the determination of need. And that was done on May 7, 2018, and March, and May 16, 2018. And their bait stamp number, 743 and 1116. And they're two-page documents. But the determinations of need dated May 7 and May 16 were after April 18. And under Rahm Law, once you file a protest, our statute says that the shall not proceed further with the solicitation or with the award of the contract prior to final resolution of such protest, and any such further action is void. And then we cited a case, all lawyers know what void means, but we cited a case saying, a void action cannot be ratified and enforced as it's treated as no, it never existed. So the point is, prior to April 18, 2018, I have not seen any written determination approved by the negotiating team and authorized by them. And that would have to be something in writing, and there would have to be a vote on that by the negotiating team. And then the only determination of need I've seen at all was executed on May 7th and I think it's May 16th. But those are void because it happened after April 18th. So without a determination of need, we believe the RFP has to be canceled because you have to have a determination of need, and that's what the statute says. And it uses the word shall, which is mandatory. Now, in addition to that, there's another statute, which is 5 GCA section 5008E, and it says that if a RFP involves off-island experience or past performance, then you have to have a determination need on that particular issue, authorizing the RFP. So RFPs have to have a determination need for the RFP, but then you have to have a separate determination need if the RFP involves off-island experience or past performance. Now, in this particular case, sir, there's no question but that this RFP involves both off-island experience and past performance off-island. And I would cite to section 500.3, which is on all kinds of bait stamp numbers, but I have a copy of the one from the RFP right here.
What was the section again? I'm sorry.
It's, you know, I have multiple copies. Could I provide copies?
Sure.
To Your Honor? I apologize for calling Your Honor.
Yeah, you just called Mr. Camacho.
I have to discipline myself not to do that. Let me give some copies and I'll talk about it real quick.
Thank you.
For the record, the Deputy Public Auditor and Hearing Officer have been given... Titano, we've all been given this three-page document, pages 34 to 36. Please proceed.
Yeah. It's 500.3 says... Whether carrier is experience rated or not experience rated, it will be required, where applicable, to submit data of the following off-island referrals. So that's clearly talking about off-island referral data that you have had in the past experiences off-island. That falls dead within the statute and requires a written determination of need if an RFP involves that. Then you can go to section 2.29.3, which I think is on page 36. It talks about inpatient services which are unavailable in Guam and rendered by the preferred providers. That's talking about off-island experiences. And then if you look over on page 36 of 2.30. Now, by the way, these are form contracts. You have the RFP, but then attached to the RFP, you have sample contracts that they want you to enter into. So this is part of the RFP here. This talks about if the service is unavailable in Guam, or unavailable on island, that you have to have. It says, in case of medical emergency, care is needed off island. That's 2.31. So,
all right, so Mr. Mayor, just real quick for the purpose of preserving the record here, I'm going to mark pages 34 to 36 as Exhibit A.
Okay.
And these are portion of the RFP's form contract?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Actually, the first one is the RFP, that's 500.3, and the other two are sample contracts to be considered and entered into by the offerors.
All right, so for clarification, we're going to call then page 34, Exhibit A, and this is a RFP page 34. And then pages 35 and 36 will be a portions of the RFP's form contract. Would that be accurate?
Yes, sir.
Very well.
Now, in addition to this, I didn't make a copy of it, but on bait stamp page 989 in the gigantic procurement record, there's a letter from the governor discussing the RFP where he makes reference to the fact that it involves members, quote, going off island to seek specialty care. So the point being is that this RFP clearly involves consideration of an offeror's off-island experience and past performance providing medical care. When you have that, you have to have a written determination. Now, the argument against that that's been advanced by the Department of Administration is that, oh, we don't really need that because of Section 4 GCA 4301, Subpart 8B. And the argument is, because of this particular section, we don't have to comply with Section 5 GCA 5008, Subpart E, which requires a written determination when you involve off-island experience. But here's the problem with that argument. 4301 just simply says you have to publish the RFP in off-island publications. And I don't dispute that. But 4301 was never intended to supersede 5008 Subpart E. And the law of statutory construction says that unless two statutes are irreconcilable, in other words, the only reason why you have one supersede the other is if they're totally irreconcilable, and that, and this is a quote, courts have a duty to regard each as effective and to arrive at a construction that will harmonize them. And that's Ex Parte SCW 826 Southern 2nd 844. But that's just a general statement of law. Now, of course these two statutes can be harmonized. In fact, they're apples and oranges. They don't even deal with the same subject matter. One statute, 5008, which we're relying on to cancel the RFP because there's not a determination of need on that issue, simply says that when you require off-island experience or performance, then you have to have a determination of need. The other statute just simply says you got to publish the RFP off-island. Not only are they not irreconcilable, they are meant to work together. You do a written determination of need, you do the RFP, and then you publish it off-island. This is not a situation involving repeal by implication, which, by the way, is highly disfavored in the law. Okay. So that's one ground. Another ground to cancel the RFP is the failure to conduct an investigation. Now, in discussing this, I want to make something clear. I do not believe that Ms. Titino or DOA, and certainly not the AG's office, were negligent. I don't think they had any malice. I don't think they had any wrongful intent. I don't think they were trying to cover anything up. I want to make that clear. I have a lot of respect for the AG's office. But what happened, I think the undisputed facts clearly require that an investigation be conducted and that a recommendation be made. And what happened was on March 22, Matthew Santos, who at the time I believe was working in the legislature and was on the negotiating team, he wrote an email, which is bait stamp 1018, where he said someone on the negotiating team had, quote, obviously spoken with a party of interest, close quote. Now, these were quotes from his email. And this was then circulated around. Now, in addition to that, there is a record where Mr. Francis Santos, and I don't know really the relationship at all, even if there is one between those two, I don't know. But we do know he was a representative of the GRMC, which is the Guam Regional Medical Center. On March 30, he expressed concern in person to DOA about GRMC not being part of any provider network. Now, Negotiating Team Rule 10 expressly prohibits unsolicited communications with subcontractors. Okay, so negotiating team members are not supposed to be communicating with subcontractors. Now, the argument of the Department of Administration is that, oh, this doesn't really apply here because it was not known at these times that either the GEM or GRMC were offerors or subcontractors. That on March 22 and March 30, that we did not know that either this GEM or GRMC were or were going to be subcontractors. But that is inconsistent with the undisputed facts. Let's take them one at a time. The GEM was an existing subcontractor on March 22, 2018. They not only were a potential subcontractor, they were an existing subcontractor in the healthcare contract that not only we had then, but we have now. Okay, so clearly they were a subcontractor, and that was an inappropriate communication. That was recognized by Mr. Santos, in all fairness to Matthew Santos. And that's the reason he was alarmed by it. There should have been a meeting of the negotiating team where they voted on a voting sheet to make a decision to request an investigation. I don't believe such a voting sheet exists. And then there should have been an investigation by the Attorney General's office and then a recommendation of the Attorney General's office. And I don't believe that happened because I'm unaware of there being a voting sheet and a decision to request an investigation to begin with. Okay. Now let's talk about GRMC. Every draft of the RFP that has been produced to us from the very beginning had a provision in it which provided that GRMC was going to be a minimum qualification. It first appears to us in the procurement record that's been produced on January 30, 2018. It's actually discussed in an email, I think the date of it is February 2, 2018, from the AON representative where she was asking questions about GRMC being a minimum requirement. The point, and it is, like I said, in every draft of the RFP produced, GRMC is a minimum requirement. So on March 30, 2018, that was the day that they made the decision to have GRMC be a minimum requirement. Everyone knew on March 30, 2018, that GRMC was a minimum requirement and that they were going to be a subcontractor. They would have to be a subcontractor in the bid. So to come in and say, oh, well, we really had no idea that the GEM or GRMC were going to be subcontractors, that is inconsistent with facts. Everyone knew that. And there should have been an investigation at that time. But again, I want to make this clear. When I was a really young attorney, and Ms. Titino, she may look young, but she's not young. You're so busy in the Attorney General's office. You get so much going on getting these RFPs. I mean, the fact they overlooked this, it's certainly understandable. There's no doubt about it. I don't think there's any malice here. I don't think there's any corruption here. I, But it was a failure to follow the rules. Okay, it's just like a stop sign. You know, I've rolled through stop signs before. It doesn't mean I'm a bad person, but you still get a ticket. And there needs to be no finding of wrongful intent here. It's just a matter of not following the rules. And that's an important rule. And we should invalidate this RFP. Another reason to invalidate this RFP, if there is one contract with the government of Guam that most government of Guam employees have an interest in, it's this contract. Because this is the one that affects everyone. So if we're going to follow the rules in any contract, if we're going to get nitpicky about following the rules so that everyone has a comfort level that everything's on the up and up, it's this contract. Because I guarantee you, you poll 100 GovGuam employees and you ask them, what's the most important GovGuam contract to you? I'll be really surprised if 99 of them don't say this contract right here, because it affects everyone, thousands and thousands of people. Okay. So I think that it needs to be rescinded on that ground and just rebooted, do the investigation, vote on the RFP again, and let's roll forward. The other ground is a conflict of interest. Now, before I talk about this conflict of interest, I want to make something really clear here. Take care, and I personally have a great deal of respect for the governor. Okay? I in no way am suggesting that the governor has engaged in any intentional wrongdoing whatsoever. Okay? I don't believe that to be the case. I never worked in the governor's office. Shannon has. She probably knows more than I do. But my guess is the governor probably signs 50 to 100 documents a day. And, you know, I know that even in my little business that I used to have, I'm not much of a lawyer anymore, to be honest with you. I'm kind of retiring, but I used to sign documents all the time. My guess is someone just put some documents in front of the governor and he just signed them, just like he signs most things. And I think this was probably an innocent mistake, okay? But I do believe the facts show that it was clearly contrary to what the statutes were. Because what actually happened was, is that the governor appointed and signed a document appointing as the negotiating team member from the general public, a gentleman named Roy Adenay, who clearly had a conflict. And in fairness, they recognized that and they, I guess, he recused himself or something. Then the governor signed another appointment from the general public for a lady named Brenda Judicpa. And she then became the negotiating team member for the general public. Now, the negotiating team member for the general public is a particularly important negotiating team member because there are some negotiating team members that are so important that the negotiating team rules and the statutes provide that they can't even delegate their vote to someone else. Many of them can. In other words, they can delegate someone else to go and vote for it. Not the negotiating team member of the general public, because that's an important negotiating team member. Now, the statutes in Guam, our procurement laws, expressly state that a government official, including the governor is a government official. I mean, I cited the definition of it in the memos. I mean, no one's going to argue the governor of Guam is not a government official. That you cannot participate directly or indirectly in the procurement process if your family has a financial interest in the procurement. So you can't participate in a procurement process directly or indirectly if your family has a financial interest. Now, I think we can all agree that this, our governor's family has a financial interest in this. No one's disputed this in the briefs. It'd be silly to dispute that because they're involved with the health insurance company that provides health care to 85% of the government employees. And in addition to that, insurance company has actually expressed an interest and has signed some documents that are bait stamp number picking up RFPs. What should have happened is the lieutenant governor should have probably signed this. The governor recused himself, just had the lieutenant governor do it. Now, in addition to that, when you have the conflict of interest, you're supposed to disclose that in writing, and you're supposed to make an official record of it and put it in the record. And that is in 4 GCA 15205G and 5 GCA 5628E. And maybe it's C, I don't know. My typing's a little funny here. Now, our statute says that when the procurement laws are not followed, then the RFP, quote, shall be canceled and thereafter may be revised. Now, every lawyer knows what the word shall means. You know, sometimes you say may, which means, you know, you can do it or not do it. Sometimes you say shall. Shall means mandatory. That means that if the procurement procedures are not consistent with the statutes, then the RFP, quote, shall be canceled and thereafter revised. Now, I want to reboot to make something clear, because I have a lot of respect for the governor. I don't think anything is intentionally
done. We get that point, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, I don't think anything is done wrong. But I think that this is clearly, we did not have a proper appointment for our general member. Okay, that's clear. That appointment was we do not have a proper member, general member of the negotiating team. And because of that, we should cancel the RFP and revise it after we have a member appointed by another official. Now, lastly, I just want to say that, you know, we put this in our briefs because, you know, a lot of people are relying on their health insurance, so we want to make clear no one's being prejudiced. We cited to the provision in the existing contract, which I have copies of right here, that talks about the renewability. So there's still time to go through the process again, issue the RFP, and let's follow the rules appropriately. But even assuming it rolled past September 30th, that doesn't mean people with government employees don't have health care, because there's a renewability clause inside the contract that requires it to roll over. And I can provide copies of that to everyone if it's okay.
Okay, we're going to call your renewability clause Exhibit C. So for the record, the purchasing agency's attorneys and the deputy public auditor have copies of appellant's Exhibit C. Please proceed.
Now, I'll just close with saying that no one is going to be prejudiced if we just back up and comply with some of the statutes and regulations that we pointed out in our motion to cancel. And I think we should do that because of the importance of this particular contract, and we just want everyone to have an assurance that the rules have been followed and that everything's above board. And on that, I'll close, sir.
All right. So on the appellant's motion to cancel the RFP, Ms. Titano, Mr. Perez, you have the floor for your opposition, if any.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. First of all, we'd like to acknowledge that the contract does allow the government and the carriers to roll over the existing FY18 contracts, so there won't be any loss of coverage, and I thank Mr. Mayor for pointing that out to the public auditor. Also, on the motion to cancel, we'd like to note that some of these issues that are being raised by TakeCare is currently before the negotiating team on their supplemental or second protest, and they are still reviewing the second protest, and hopefully we'll be able to respond to this as soon as possible. We do have a meeting tomorrow, so hopefully it'll be addressed, and whether there's a cancellation or a revision of the RFP based on the second protest, it's still undetermined at this moment. But I also like to note, after saying that the WOM procurement law, specifically 5 GCA 5451, states that if there is a determination that there's been a violation of law in the solicitation, the remedies available to the government is either to revise, to comply with the law, or to cancel the RFP. And as I go through the issues raised by TakeCare, I think that because we're still early in the procurement process, as the RFP was just issued, and we're at the stage of reviewing questions from potential offerors, that some of these issues, if it is determined by the public auditor to be in violation of law, could be revised to comply with the law and not necessarily be canceled. First, we already discussed the voting sheet, so I won't go into that now. Mr. Mayor mentioned the lack of a determination of need. Now, it's true that it was signed by the director, acting director, Mr. Ariola, after the stay was put in place, but the determination of need was actually done prior to the stay being in place, and it was just documented after the stay was in place in order to file with the public auditor and not in furtherance of an award of a contract in the solicitation, which is what is in the procurement law with regard to a stay.
I'm trying to understand your argument there. You're saying that the termination of need was actually drafted and it was just merely signed after the protest?
Well, there are elements in the determination of need, and that's correct. The last component in that determination of need was to determine whether there are individuals in the government of Guam that can actually carry out the services that the government is seeking to acquire. And once the Human Resources Department of, or Division of the Department of Administration confirmed that there are no employees or positions available to carry out the services being requested by the government, then you can proceed with the solicitation. That's actually a requirement in 31142 GAR, I believe. So those procedural requirements were being done, and once it was completed or confirmed by DOA's personnel section, unfortunately the memorialization or the documentation of it didn't happen or wasn't signed until after the stay was in place, but it was primarily to submit it to the public auditor for purposes of submitting the procurement record. And even if it is deemed void because it was signed after the statute 5451 still allows the government to revise or to reissue one in the event that the stay is lifted and the procurement is allowed to proceed forward. Mr. Mayor also mentioned that the law requires a negotiating team to make the determination of need. And it's been our practice that the Department of Administration is the one facilitating the procurement and therefore is the one responsible for all the written determinations in the solicitation, including the determination of need, and that's why it was signed by the Department of Administration's director, who is the procurement officer in this solicitation. But nonetheless, if it is determined that it should be the negotiating team, then the law still allows us to revise the solicitation to have that in the record. Take Care also mentioned that there was no written determination as required by 5008, which is 5GCA 5008. We take a different interpretation as to the applicability of 5008. We saw it as requiring the offerer any off-island experience or past performance. And because the RFP doesn't actually ask of the offerer potential carriers of their specific off-island experience, it does ask for them to perform services that are to have in their proposal the ability for employees to go off island to acquire health coverage if necessary. But that doesn't speak to the actual offerer's experience as the way we interpreted 5008. In the RFP, the evaluation forms to be considered to determine whether an offerer is qualified begins under base stamp 000775.2, which I have, but I don't have enough copies, but I'd be happy to provide them after, is a list of the criteria that the negotiating team asks of each offerer to submit in order to determine whether they're qualified does not include any question as to off-island experience or performance. Furthermore, the citation to requiring the negotiating team or the department administration to publish the RFP off-island governs this solicitation as it is specific to this solicitation and not necessarily looking to repeal 5008. We just note that our interpretation of 5008 is that it doesn't apply in this RFP, but even if it does, we still have the ability under 5451 to make such a determination and put it in the record as it allows us to revise the solicitation to make it comply with law. The other section or the other issue that TakeCare has with the solicitation are the two communications cited by TakeCare. One was when Matt Sontas emailed me specifically about a communication regarding the gym no longer being included in the RFP between a gym representative and the speaker of the legislature, Benjamin Cruz. And the other communication was the GRMC representative, according to the communication on Mr. Francis Sontas, speaking to DOA, who specifically is Leonora Candasso, who works in the benefits section of the Department of Administration. This section is responsible for the execution of the health insurance benefit to the government of Guam, specifically to line agencies, but it also provides assistance to other autonomous and DOE employees as well. But nonetheless, what the rule of procedure, rule X or section X of 3283, which is cited by TakeCare, those are rules of procedure for the conduct of the annual solicitation by the negotiating team. And as correctly stated by TakeCare, what it requires is that if there are communications that are prohibited under the rule, the team is supposed to request the AG to do an investigation and then thereafter make a recommendation as to how to proceed. But the consequence of any unsolicited communication in violation of that law or rule is not necessarily cancellation, but may potential disqualification as an offerer to the solicitation. The gym is not being asked for in this solicitation. We don't know whether there'll be a subcontractor, if you will, until the proposals are submitted. Furthermore, it is true that GRMC is being asked to be included as a participating provider in the carrier's network of providers, but still there is time for the team to ask the AG to investigate it and come up with a recommendation on how to proceed.
Ms. Faino, just real quick. So your position is you don't dispute these allegations of contact were made. Would that be fair to say?
That's true. They were made. It's in the log. It's in the email. But we're just saying that it doesn't warrant cancellation because you could still do the investigation. The teams, and as a matter of fact, it was brought to the AG's attention to me specifically, and if there is an investigation, of course, I'm not at liberty to discuss that, but it is our position that it doesn't warrant cancellation as there's still time in this procurement process to do the investigation or finalize the investigation, whatever it may be, and make the recommendation to the team on how to proceed. And again, it calls for disqualification and not necessarily cancellation under Rule X or Section X of Public Law 3283, which again is the rule of procedure for the negotiating team for the upcoming solicitation, not the existing contracts, but for the upcoming, or the solicitation for the FY19 contract to provide health insurance coverage to GovGuam employees and their families. The last issue raised by TakeCare is the conflict of interest issue. And there is a statute that does require the governor to appoint the general public member. That occurred prior to this solicitation being it actually occurred prior to the first meeting of the negotiating team and the work that would go into actually preparing the RFP or approving and reviewing the RFP. As I said, this is a solicitation for a new contract and not necessarily the existing contract, which we agree Select Care has a contract this year to provide insurance coverage to Gov. Guam employees and their families, but we are talking about the new solicitation. And it wasn't apparent that there was a conflict of interest until Select Care actually registered or picked up a proposal. That's when the conflict became apparent. But nonetheless, again, if the public auditor finds that a disclosure of conflict be included in the record, we could still do that. We don't believe it warrants cancellation.
Let me understand the posture of the solicitation at this point. So no one submitted a proposal yet, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, there's just a people who have, various interested parties have picked up proposals.
That's correct.
All right, thank you. Please proceed.
And so in conclusion with that issue, again, the governor's conflict wasn't apparent when he made the appointment at the time because we haven't even begun the procurement process with the team. But it shouldn't be fatal to this procurement process because we could still provide that in the record if required. But it shouldn't also invalidate the appointment of Ms. Judikpa because it predated the team meeting. But even if, we could still
let me just ask you this, Ms. Titano. So for the appointments of these two general public members, were both accomplished before Select Care picked up a
Yes, that's true. They were actually done before. So they were done before the
both
publication
of
the RFP and before Select Care picked up a packet.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
And as I said, going back to Mr. Adonai, he was disqualified and replaced, just for your information, with Ms. Judikpa. As noted earlier, the appointment occurred prior to the publication of the RFP and any packets picked up by Select Care. And again, reiterating 54511, we believe that if there is any determination that some of these issues need to be addressed in the solicitation, we're still early in the procurement process to allow the team to revise the solicitation to comply with law. And again, these issues are before the negotiating team as we speak. Well, it's before the negotiating team to determine whether to cancel or to revise in response to Take Care's protests. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, any rebuttal?
I'll be brief. First of all, the procurement record is at issue in this appeal because of the, to begin with, we asked for a complete procurement record as part of our protest. That is part of this appeal. Second of all, the OPA's office itself asked for a complete procurement record. So whether or not we have a complete procurement record and it's accurate is certainly at issue in this appeal. Second, the statement that they can either revise or cancel, that you don't have to cancel. Well, I think the statute's pretty clear. It says that
it's a remedy statute.
Yeah, it's in. I have it here somewhere. Sorry about this. But I think if you look at the statute, it is actually quite clear. It says, shall be canceled and thereafter may be revised. It doesn't say that, you don't have to cancel it. If you violated the law, you can just it's 5 GCA 5451. It says shall be canceled and thereafter may be revised. So that seems pretty clear. The suggestion is that the determination of need was made on 3/30, and that this exchange of emails between DOA staff members is sufficient. Well, I think if you look at those emails, first of all, that's not a determination of need. But second of all, there's no reference in there whatsoever to off-island experience or past experience in off-island matters. And that's another requirement for a determination of need. The argument is made that the negotiating team itself didn't have to make a determination of need because the practice of DOA is that DOA did that. Well, I don't doubt that that is DOA's practice, but I do believe that is not consistent with the statutes, which expressly state that it is the negotiating team itself that is responsible for this particular solicitation. So it's really the negotiating team that is responsible for the solicitation in this particular matter. And that would be negotiating team rule number one. Quote, the negotiating team is responsible for the solicitation of group health insurance benefits for employees and retirees of the government. Period. Close quote. So it was the negotiating team that needed to make the determination. There's been no argument that that was made by the negotiating team. There was a citation to 500.2 that says there's no reference in there to the need for off-island experience or performance. Well, that may very well be true. But in 500.3, it clearly says, and I quote, whether carrier is experience rated or not experience rated, it will be required where applicable to submit data on the off-island referrals. So obviously this RFP involved off-island referrals. Now, the arguments it made that the governor had no conflict because the proposals had not yet been submitted. And I guess the suggestion is that he would have no idea that Select Care would actually bid on this proposal. Well, I think everyone could agree that that's kind of a stretch, considering how Select Care is the largest health care insurer for the government of Guam, has over 80% of the market. Also, I didn't know this argument to be made, or what I could have done was pulled numerous documents from the record showing meetings between the Aon representative of the negotiating team and Select Care during January and February of 2018, where they met not only with Select Care, but with Take Care and with Netcare to get data from them. Because what they do is Aon, the expert that's been retained by the negotiating team, in order to put together the RFP information, they go and they have meetings with the different health insurance. And there was meetings with Select Care, there was meetings with Take Care, and there was meetings with Netcare. And this was during January and February of 2018, which was before the negotiating team approved the RFP, which I think was on March 30, 2018. So I think the spirit of the law is that when you are you or your family have a financial interest in the procurement, and clearly the financial interest is obvious, then you have to recuse yourself. And I'll rest on that.
Thank you. Do the parties need a break before we go into the motion to compel, or would we like to go right into it?
I'm ready
to go. All right, so Mr. Mayor, on your motion to compel production of documents, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you, sir. First, I think it's important. We're going to have to talk about negotiating rule four, because that's really the issue here. That's the rule about confidentiality in the negotiating team. And that particular rule uses the phrase confidential and confidentiality. But what you'll notice is every time that phrase is used, is it in a sentence that refers to proposals. Now, the argument is that, but it also mentions meetings. But I think the intent of the rule is clearly to protect the integrity of the sealed bidding process. In other words, when you make a sealed bid, then the negotiating team's going to have meetings in order to discuss those, and obviously those have to be confidential because that would violate the sealed bidding process and put it at risk. It certainly was not intended to protect and seal and make secret the negotiating team's meetings where they're just discussing what kind of RFP to put together. And I believe that that would be inconsistent with our general procurement laws found in 5 GCA 5001 subpart B3 and 5001 subpart B8, which talk about increased public confidence in the procedures followed in public procurement and public access to all aspects of procurement consistent with the sealed bid procedure. Now, more importantly, in order to defend this appeal, not only must the negotiating team explain their reasoning in including GRMC as a minimum requirement, they had in fact presented reasons that they supposedly considered in including GRMC as a minimum requirement. That's contained in both their appellate record, okay, and in their response to our protest, and in some of the briefs that have been filed before this particular, the OPA. And you can't have it both ways. In other words, you can't say, oh, we can't really show you why we did this, because that would require showing what happened in the meeting. But here's why we did it. I'm going to just take our word for it. Now, I have no opinion. We just simply have to have access to the actual evidence of the reasons that the negotiating team elected to have GRMC as a minimum requirement. The actual evidence of that would be in the audio recordings of the meetings and in emails and other documents where they discussed GRMC. I believe this is probably recognized by the Attorney General's office and the negotiating team that they can't even defend this case if they can't discuss what happened in the meetings and why they considered this. I think what they really want is just an order from the LPA that protects them so they're not being accused of revealing confidential information. And I also think that to allow the negotiating team to present its reasons for including GRMC and not giving us access to the actual evidence is denying take care of substantive and procedural due process, which requires notice and an opportunity to be heard. We can't have notice of what actually happened in the meetings and can't be heard on what actually happened in the meetings unless we see the actual evidence of what happened in the meetings. Now, the other suggestion that's been made in the briefs is instead of disclosing this information to take care, they can just simply file it under seal. And one of the things I did not realize until I was reading some of the briefs is I take it that documents have actually now been filed under seal that have not been produced to take care. I did not know that. I did know that there were certain references to bait stamp numbers and that those bait stamp numbers had not been produced to us, but I was not aware that they had also been filed with the OPA. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe they have not been filed with the OPA.
Well, in your pleadings, you state that I guess you were making some complaints about their privilege log.
Yes, yes.
Well, yeah, is that what you're talking about?
Well, no, I don't believe the documents in the privilege log have been filed. Maybe they have. But there's another log that lists, I think those from 1200-something on. There's numbers. And I saw those, and I know they weren't produced to us. And I thought, well, okay, they had the entire procurement record bait stamp.
Okay, you're referring to the tab 14 documents?
It may be tab 14. But okay. I guess what I'm saying is I now take it from reading the opposition briefs that some material has actually been produced to the OPA that has not been disclosed to us, and that somehow we take issue with that, okay? And the problem we see with that, filing things under seal without disclosing it to us, are as follows. First, it denies us substantive and procedural due process because you don't disclose to the judge factual information without giving it to the opposing party. Now, I know technically you're not a judge, sir, but yes, you are.
But actually, in the Superior Court, correct me if I'm wrong, that parties can file documents under seal that only the judge and the party providing them have access to. And it's up to the judge to decide what portions, if any, would go to the competing party. These are things such as trade secrets or otherwise prejudicial type information that may or may not be relevant. The judge certainly could rule on those two issues before saying, okay, we can submit that to the other party. Am I not correct in that?
Well,
that's just two minor examples of that concept.
It's possible, but extremely rare. And generally what happens is this. Normally, the only time you'll ever show a judge something without discussing the other side is first, you have to get permission to do that. And you have to notify the other side that you are intending to do that and give them the chance to address that. And then second, it is normally only done on attorney-client privilege information, where you will then show it to the judge, you don't disclose it, and then the judge looks at it and decides whether or not this is privilege.
Well, in the context, Mr. Mayor, of procurement in particular, because this is a RFP process, there are some documents that are not disclosed until the end, until a contractor has been selected, such as the log of people who picked up packets filed. Further, there's the proposal of the party who gets awarded the contract. It's just under general law procurement law and regulations. Isn't disclosed until the award is made, and the proposals of the other parties typically are not provided. So these are things that, if they're required to produce a record at this time, because no award's been made, just giving examples of documents that might be non-disclosable at this time to protect the integrity of the procurement process and to not give the competing bidders an unfair advantage over others. So are you saying that no such privileges exist? Is that your argument? That all have to be disclosed at this time? Even if they jeopardize the procurement process?
Let me just address the rules.
Sure.
Okay. I think there's two potential rules. 12107. These are the OPA rules. Okay. Now, your rules say you cannot have ex parte communications with you. And it says documents, communications, any form, written, oral, otherwise. You cannot have ex parte communications. That's 12107 of the OPA rules. Now, there's another rule, which is 12108, I believe, that allows you to designate certain documents as confidential, but it does not state that you can only produce those to the OPA. It just allows you to stamp certain documents confidential. And then you submit them and you give them to the other side. And once you do that, the other side then cannot disclose that to third parties, in my opinion, unless coming back to the OPA and contesting the confidential designation. I don't know how you can submit information to the OPA ex parte, which clearly this is ex parte, without our permission and without our knowledge, and Your Honor reviewing this material and have it be consistent with 12107. Now, I didn't bring a copy of your OPA rules here, but I would suggest that it's a very clear rule, barring any and all ex parte communications. Now, to answer your question, is it possible that there may be some privileged information that they would not disclose to us? Yes, it is. And I'll give you a good example. I can't think of any proprietary information, honestly, but I can think of privileged information on the attorney-client privilege. Now, we don't have a valid privilege log, and I'll address that in a second, but I think if there were direct communications directly between the AG's office and the negotiating team, for example, discussing this litigation, then yeah, of course that's going to be privileged. But then you prepare a proper privilege log, and they wouldn't produce that to you or to me. I have to say, I can conceive of no proprietary information that would be privileged at this point, but I mean, I guess it's possible, but we'd have to hear about it.
That normally wouldn't take place until the proposal is
submitted,
and only if the party says this portion of our proposal is proprietary or a trade secret.
Certainly at a certain point you're going to get to, but not at this stage of this RFP process. So I believe that So filing material with Your Honor, if that has in fact happened, that is very inappropriate. It's a direct violation of 12107. It is not authorized by 121.08. You have to harmonize those two FBI rules. And I think, at least when I read it, it's pretty clear to me, can't give things ex parte. You can submit material and designate it confidential. And then if we looked at the confidential material and we thought, oh, this is ridiculous, they're just trying to hide things from the public, and I'm not suggesting they are, by the way, but if we looked at it and thought they were, we could then come in front of you and say, we can test this designation of confidentiality. We think the public should have access to this. And then DOP would then make a decision about it. That's the way those rules are intended to work. They are not intended to allow people to come in and just submit material, which we have no idea what this material says. This is a direct violation of our due process rights. If they have submitted material that they have not given to us, then we don't have notice of that material, and we don't have the ability to respond to it. We don't have the ability to defend against that material. The other thing is that I would respectfully suggest that the material that they submit to the OPA, unless it has been designated confidential, and it's a valid designation of confidentiality, not simply trying to hide things from the public, because the public has a great interest in this hearing, that if they are submitting things to the OPA that really shouldn't be confidential, well then, yeah, the public should have access to it. The other potential offerors should have access to it so that there's a level playing field in the bidding process. Now, the argument's been made that, oh, stop complaining about all this. Why don't you just wait until we award the contract and then you can protest that later? I don't want to spend a lot of time discussing the inadequacy of that remedy. Let me just say that our statutes expressly give us the right to protest the solicitation process itself. The statutes also, everything is stayed while we're doing that. So that, no, we don't have to wait until after the award of the contract. And yes, we are harmed by simply waiting until that time. Now, but if it's, again, I know Ms. Titano is not a witness, but I interpret their opposition briefs to suggest they have filed material with the OPA that has not been disclosed to us. I'd like to know if that has happened, and I think we have the right to know that, either from the OPA or somebody. So I would like clarification on that, Your Honor. Now, the other thing, communications with AI. This seems pretty simple to me. The Attorney General's office, by law, represents government agencies. I don't dispute at all that the Attorney General's office has the right to communicate with government agencies in a privileged manner. That is certainly the case, because that's their client. But I think the law is also equally clear that you do not have privileged communication to an expert. And Aon's is clearly a retained consulting expert for the government. And lawyers know that, you know, this is my client right here. I talk to my client, that's privileged. I talk to my client as an expert we retained. That's not going to be privileged. Okay, that's going to be disclosed. And I cited some law on this, is that the majority view and the better view is that all things communicated to experts and considered by an expert must be disclosed. Just to be clear, now, there's been no law cited to the contrary on this, and I don't think there is any law to the contrary. So the communications between the negotiating team and the AG that involve Aon need to be disclosed to us. And we've identified the specific date stamp numbers that we can tell looking at the record that we have seen. Now, there may be documents that we haven't seen, and I'm not aware of those because obviously we haven't seen them. But the ones we have seen, I identify, and I'm not going to read all the date stamp numbers. They're in a proposed order, I think, we submitted to the OPA. Lastly, I want to talk about the coverage law. I'm sure the AG's office has some communications that would be protected by the attorney-client privilege. But I am also equally confident that the privilege law that has been produced is fatally defective. Okay? And the reason I say that is that the law that has been produced that purports to protect attorney-client privilege documents, well, to begin with, it actually refers to communications with AI. Those aren't going to be privileged. But it also does not indicate that an attorney actually participated in any of the meetings, does not indicate that the attorney was a party to any of the documents referred to in the bid of privilege law, does not identify the attorney or their client relating to any specific document, does not identify who drafted each document, does not identify all the recipients of each document. and does not explain why each document is allegedly privileged. So, in addition to producing documents to us, and so I guess what we're asking for is, number one, we want to be provided with everything they provided to the OPA, if that is not the case. Number two, we want to be provided with the documents we've asked for, which are the audio recordings of the meetings and communications relating to GRMC. Number three, we want them to produce a privilege log that complies with legal requirements and gives the specificity we need to question those legal requirements. And as I said with Aon, if we see on there that Aon has been party to some of these communications, yes, we're going to dispute that and say we need those communications. So that's our motion to compel.
Now, Ms. Tightno, Ms. Perez in opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho. That is true. Because of 32-18, the negotiating team is seeking an order to disclose what is otherwise, what we otherwise interpret as not being able to disclose, and that is Section 4 of 32-18 regarding information obtained in meetings. And if we do get an order, we'd be happy to submit what is what we would deem as could be prejudicial information under seal, which is permitted under Public Auditor OPA Rule 12106, which allows confidential information to be filed under seal with the OPA. We don't consider it ex parte because of Section 12106. And after submitting under seal, the Public Auditor, if the public auditor determines that such information can be revealed to take care of, then at least they had the opportunity to review the material that the agency determines as prejudicial information to the procurement process.
Now, just to answer or to directly address Mr. Mayor's question, the AG's office did file documents under seal, is that correct?
That's correct. We submitted two.
Okay. And part of it was this 32-18 material that you
We haven't or? Submitted that because we weren't okay. we were holding that until we get an order.
Okay, so what have you filed under seal? What's your justification for filing it under seal?
So the two under seal, which we provided take care with a copy of the list of documents that we filed under seal, and he noted that it may be inadequate. The privilege log, the attorney-client privilege log, we submitted the actual communications under seal with the OPA. The second filing are documents that we feel cannot be disclosed at this time because of the open solicitation, and that includes draft responses to the potential offerer's questions on the solicitation. That actually hasn't gone out officially, and so we submitted that under seal until the stay has been lifted, and we can, if we decide to proceed with the solicitation, can proceed with the solicitation. So those are the materials that have been submitted under seal. We did again provide take care a copy of the list of documents that we submitted under seal.
And the 32-18 info hasn't been submitted at all.
No, we prefer an order to submit, and we'd be happy to file once we get an order to the public auditor the 32-18 documents and give take care what we deem as non-prejudicial information, such as voting sheets, probably emails, and only as it relates to GRMC, which is their issue here. And voting sheets, potentially emails, but we object to the audio because it may encompass other conversations that may be prejudicial to this solicitation. However, we do have minutes of meetings, and we could certainly provide redacted copies to take care if that's necessary in this appeal. But we do have reservations about submitting the audios, which we do have, and we can provide to the public auditor under seal. And we believe that the Guam procurement law limits the disclosure of the record to protect the integrity of the process, which
was recognized also by Mr. Camacho earlier, and ask again that we submit that information under Section 12106 of the Public Auditor's Rules until it's been determined that it's not prejudicial to the solicitation. Regarding the privilege law, we can certainly, the public auditor has those documents, the communications, but we can certainly revise our privilege law to make it more specific if it's required, or if it's determined that it's not even privileged, we could submit that to take care. But at this time, we did submit it under seal with the OPA. So I guess to conclude, it is just our position with regard to 3218 that we would like an order to disclose those materials to the public auditor, and what is otherwise information that wouldn't prejudice the procurement process, as this is an open procurement, can be also submitted to take care. Especially that related to GRMC, except for we do ask that the audio not be, we could submit that to the public auditor, but we ask that we not be required to give a copy to take care, because it includes information that goes beyond GRMC.
I understand that part of your argument.
And then that's just my conclusion to their motion to compel.
Okay.
I'll be brief. First of all, I want to apologize. I said 12108, and it's really 12106. 12106 allows people to designate things confidential. Nothing in that rule says that they can submit that then only ex parte to the OPA. And I know you're familiar with the rules, but I think I'm accurate in my representation of it. 12107 expressly prohibits exactly what has happened here, which is ex parte communication, providing documents and information to the OPA in an ex parte manner without providing it to the opposing party. There is no way to reconcile what has happened with 12107. So we need to have information that the OPA has on this. Next, draft responses to questions. I think what's happening is I believe the publication came out on April 3, 2018, of the RFP, and after that, I saw some list of questions that were asked by offerors. There were some from SelectCare questions, there were some from TakeCare, and there were some from Medicare. Now, if there's an objection to us getting the draft responses to those questions, okay, keep them. That's okay. I mean, I can't figure out why they would be privileged, and in fact, I would argue there may be a problem with them not being disclosed. But okay, keep those. Audio recordings, that's a big problem. We need to have the audio recordings of the meetings. Nothing could have possibly happened in these meetings that's privileged. The statute says we should have complete access to the procurement process. The only thing that's protected in confidentiality is the proposals. There has not been one single specific piece of evidence that they pointed, okay, well, this item may have been discussed. We don't want to disclose to you what we discussed about that item for this reason. They're just saying, oh, it may deal with other things. Let me give you another reason that we need to see the complete audio. There have been arguments made that we included GRMC because of A, B, and C. What if A, B, and C were never discussed in the meeting? What if there's no mention of A, B, C in the meeting? Well, I'm going to object and say, well, you can't argue that's why you did it, because it was never even talked about. So how can I do that if I don't have access to the entire audio recording of what happened in these meetings? You know, what if there were discussions in the meeting that were inappropriate, you know, in preparing the RFP? I should have access to that. Now, I'm not suggesting that happen, but the only way I can possibly know that is have access to the audio recordings. The only thing they did in the meeting was approve the RFP. There's nothing confidential about it. The public itself should have the right, not only just common sense, but by statute, to had access to the procurement process and know what the thought processes were of the negotiating team when developing the RFP in any of their benefit qualifications. I cannot conceive of anything that could have happened and that it would have been confidential. And I've heard no arguments to that effect. So yes, we think we need to have copies of audio recording. Because if I don't have that, how can I contest Mr. Byrne testifying that, oh, well, we did this because of A or we did it because of B? I can't do that. There's no way to cross-examine. It denies due process. So, yes, we want the audio recordings of the meetings. We want the communications with AI, any communications with AI, any communications with AI. We want any communications involving GRMC. We're even more interested in communications like in the meetings where GRMC was never even discussed, because that will allow me to point out, well, you don't even mention this here. How can you argue that's the reason the negotiating team did it when you never even talked about it to them? So the fact that GRMC may not have been discussed is more important than GRMC being discussed. So one other point I want to make, and I don't know the answer to this. This is now, I think, July 9th. We have this here. We are supposed to do briefs next Friday, and Ms. Titano pointed out, I didn't pay attention to this, the next Friday is probably a holiday, so that's not going to be possible. But assuming that we get some information produced to us, like audio tapes, a few hundred pages of documents that apparently was filed with the OPA that we've never seen, I'm supposed to identify exhibits on July 13th. That's going to be exceptionally difficult because that's this coming Friday. If they gave me these exhibits today and I walked out of here, I honestly don't know if I would have time to listen to all the audio tapes and go through all the exhibits and then really do the right thing and identify the kind of exhibits we would need for this hearing. So we need to have a discussion either now or at some point about what are we going to do about the exhibit date. And depending on when we get the decision from the OPA, what are we going to do about the hearing date? Is that going to change now? I have to admit, I'm not happy at all with talking about changing the hearing date because I kind of rearranged my life around the hearing date, July 23, 24, 25. But I'm starting to wonder if it's going to be possible. But that depends on when we get a decision, how much information we get from the Attorney General's office and DOA, and how much time it takes us to actually go through that. And I just throw this out food for thought. I don't know the answer to it. Now, in fairness, if the OPA just says today, oh, your motions are all denied, well, I guess we have a hearing on July 23rd. I'm hoping that's not the case. But
well, as to the motion to cancel the RFP and the motion to compel, we're going to take that under advisement. Okay.
Thank you, sir. Could I just ask one other question? I frankly anticipated that. Surprise me. But and I know you probably can't do this today, but if sometimes in the very near future you could give us some guidance about the deadline to submit exhibits, which is coming up this coming Friday, and the deadline to submit trial briefs, which is coming up next Friday, and what impact all this may have on the hearing date, I would appreciate it. And I know you may not be able to do that right now. If you can do it right now, that's fine. Sometimes in the near future, I would appreciate some guidance on that.
Are
right. So speaking of the hearing, I think the only other thing is, have you received your subpoenas back, Mr. Mayor?
I think they've been received and served.
Pardon?
They were received back and actually served. On the
All right. We'll address the any need to continue the hearing dates and the decisions on the motion to compel or motion to cancel the RFP. Are there any other decision or any other issues I need to take up this time as hearing officer or the deputy public auditor needs to take up?
Well, Mr. Mayor had mentioned that I brought up to Jarek that next Friday maybe I think is a holiday and our hearing briefs are due, so I think...
I don't know. You know, I was looking at that. I didn't quite see that on the official list of holidays. Of course, that might change because our government is one where, although it's not an official holiday, somebody usually makes a decision. And we're just going to, you know, because of the day it falls, this is Guam, you know, that is one of our most popular holidays in the year. And I wouldn't be surprised, let's just put it to you that way, if that were to occur, if, even if it's not an official holiday. But without any... I don't think it's on the official list of holidays.
I think it is.
You think it is? No, Liberation Day is, but not the...
Because it's a Saturday.
It's because it's a Saturday that they recognize the Friday as the holiday.
Okay, well, we're going to verify that, but if we need to move that particular filing date, we certainly will. Okay. We're just going to verify that. But the big thing is the decisions on the motion to cancel the RFP, motion to compel, because that... might move or have a great effect if either is granted on the date, as Mr. Mayor points out. If we grant the motion to compel, well, certainly that's an issue, okay, that we're going to have to address in that decision, all right? And anything else for the parties? No? All right, so we are off the record officially at 10:30. Thank you.
Thank you.